are listening to Regeneration Rising, a podcast from Kavira Coalition's New Agrarian Program that provides information and inspiration to agrarians beginning their journey in regenerative agriculture. Each episode will explore what it means to work in regenerative agriculture, how people come to choose this as their livelihood, and why it's important to them and our future. We hope this podcast provides a foundation of knowledge for future agrarians and land stewards so they can rise up and focus on a regenerative approach to community, relationships, and the land.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Regeneration Rising. I'm Taylor Mulia, and before I introduce our fabulous guest for today, I wanted to share some exciting updates happening here at the Kavira Coalition. The first one is we are so excited. We've been working on this for so long. We are finally ready to launch our job board. As folks know that are connected with the New Agrarian Program, we get sent jobs and opportunities, internships, all the time, where we have a lot of people out there very excited to find, especially beginning farmers and ranchers that are excited to work and excited to learn. This job board is designed for really anything within the community of land stewardship, conservation, agriculture. So we're kind of excited to see where it goes. We are currently looking for folks to post jobs. So if your organization or anyone you know are currently hiring, please go to jobsearch.kiveracoalition.org, check out our site, maybe post a job. And before we know it, we're excited to have a lot of jobs to scroll through for our broader community. So excited about that. The next announcement and our final one is we are finishing up our meat processing, sort of our meat business webinars with Olivia Tincani. The first one happened in March. The upcoming one that you might catch as this podcast is coming out, our next webinar is called Processing Primer for the Producer. Olivia will have David Zarling of NMPAN, great organization, and Northwoods Group. They'll be talking about meat processing options, everything you should know from regulations to tips and tricks for working with a processor. Super excited about that. And then our last webinar of that series will be on May 9th. It's called Strategies for Starting a Meat Business. How do I begin? And Olivia has brought in some really amazing guests for that one, so you won't want to miss it. You can find the registration information at kiveracoalition.org/business-series. All right, let's get into it. My guest today is Rachel Stoltzfus. She is the herd manager at Her Angus Farms in Nottingham, Pennsylvania. She was actually an apprentice in 2022 and has become a really dear friend of mine. Very excited to have this conversation today. She was an apprentice at Round River Resource Management in Colorado. And we'll talk about her time as an apprentice, her role now, and other opportunities and challenges she's faced in the steps after apprenticeship. So I really enjoyed our conversation. I will say this is something new to me, being a person who's never lived outside of the West. Rachel was wearing a pair of rain pants, which I don't think I've ever worn rain pants in my life, but it caused some audio quality fuzziness as she was like shifting around in her chair. So if you hear any audio quality weirdness, we're very sorry. But actually, I think that's a special part of this podcast that we interview real people that are working on farms and ranches. So just wanted to give you a warning there. But otherwise, fantastic interview. I had such a good time talking to Rachel, and I hope you enjoy. Well, Rachel, thank you so much for joining us on the Regeneration Rising podcast. Let's just kind of go back to the basics and maybe just tell us about yourself. Where are you from? Did you come from an ag background? What did you enjoy studying in school?
So I am from Southeast Pennsylvania, just about 45 minutes outside of Philadelphia. And I grew up on a farm. We had a small herd of about 50 beef cows. Did the whole showed cattle in 4-H. We raised lambs and hogs. In addition, I was in FFA throughout high school. And so that was kind of my initial steps in ag. And I ended up going to Penn State and studied animal science with an ag business minor. Just kind of always knew that I was going to stay in ag, specifically with the cattle. It's just something I had a real passion for and a love for. So there was not really ever any question or doubt in my mind that that was the direction I was going to go. What that looked like overall, I wasn't sure yet. But yeah, I went to Penn State and moved around a little bit after school, but ended up back here in Pennsylvania. And I'm now located right on the Maryland line, not far from Delaware and New Jersey. So right in this little corner of all the states.
It's funny, I knew you when you were an apprentice, and I can say that I can hear your Pennsylvania accent more now than I did before, which I really love. I don't have a lot of people from Pennsylvania in my life, so I really enjoy it. It's a little tiny, and I love it. It's very cute.
So when I lived in Nebraska, they would make fun of me for certain words that I'd say, or different phrases. Like I one of them was I'm going to go and do something a while. That a while part was just foreign to them. They were like, "What? Where are you going? A while? It doesn't make sense." But they wouldn't pick on me, and I was like, "I don't know. This is just how we talk."
Yeah. Well, so you know, after you went to school, you kind of did you work in agriculture right after college?
I did. Yeah. So I did an internship during college in Nebraska on a ranch. And I ended up going back there right after I graduated. They hired me on full time, and I absolutely loved it out there. They had cow-calf pairs and then also had a pretty good size replacement heifer program. And so I was kind of just a ranch hand, worked just with me and my manager on about 10,000 acres. And it was a lot of long days and long nights, but I absolutely lived for it. It was a really neat time in my life and a place where I think I developed or really fine-tuned a lot of technical skills because I was working alone a lot. So kind of just trying to figure out how to do things when you're working by yourself. I think that's where a lot of that came from. But yeah, I worked there for 2 years before moving on.
And then eventually you found the New Agrarian program and you were an apprentice at Round River. And I do remember that about you, that you had so much more experience than a lot of our apprentices. How would you describe your apprenticeship experience at Round River?
I found Round River, or actually I suppose Round River found me after leaving Nebraska. I was kind of up in the air, didn't exactly know which direction I wanted to go, knew I wanted to stay in ag. And so Lewis reached out and, you know, got me interested. And I think I talked to you and ended up coming to Colorado. And it was a bit of a shock, honestly, at first, even though I had lived pretty remotely in Nebraska coming off of a ranch. It was still just such a large ranch and just so many acres, so many head of cattle. And it was really neat, but I think it kind of set the stage for the direction my life is going now. I want to describe it as like a window, not necessarily the door, because I didn't take the step through the door when I was out there, but it was like this window I was looking through, and I could see all these new practices and ideas and in what we call regenerative ag. And it was amazing, and I was totally on board, and it kind of, yeah, set the stage for the direction that I now am focused on going. And so, yeah, I really enjoyed it. Definitely had some struggles, as I'm sure all the apprentices did. But looking back, I'm so glad I did it. It was such a good experience.
It often takes apprentices a year or so to kind of process those challenges and like pull the lessons from that time. What would you say, you know, now that you've had a little bit of time to kind of reflect, what are you proud of accomplishing from that time?
I think a sense of capability, and I kind of touched on this in where I worked before, but just having a determination, and if you set your mind to something, you can figure out how to do it, no matter what the situation is. Because we were, as apprentices, we were asked to do some pretty intense things by ourselves, even just down to moving the whole herd of yearlings by ourselves. Building that confidence, I think, is something I'm most proud of in myself.
Yeah. Are there any other sort of lessons that you're still absorbing from that time or still processing?
Yeah, definitely learning to work with different people and navigate people. I'm still constantly reminding myself to just step back and feel out what other people's needs are, because in college I worked with a lot of people, but then Nebraska, it was just me and one guy, and Colorado, it was me and the other apprentices. And so learning how to be more of a team player, I think, was something I'm definitely still working on. I think I'll be working on that for a long time. It's a never ending lesson.
You know, near the end of your apprenticeship, you had an opportunity to go back to Pennsylvania and get hired on a ranch that was closer to your family, and you were so excited. So you're still there. It's been a couple of years since you graduated. Tell us about the operation. What do they do, and what is your role?
I work at Her Angus Farm in Nottingham, Pennsylvania. This is where the original company was founded, but now they have locations all up and down the East Coast, Ohio. They own a farm. The main purpose of it was a way to utilize the waste product that comes out of the plant, all of the excess chips or potato peelings. And then a big part was what to do with all of the water that's used to wash the potatoes. So we spray and irrigate all of our hay ground with water coming out of the snack food plant. And then we feed all of the byproducts to cattle on a feedlot. We also have a cow-calf herd, about 200 cows right now. And we have a embryo transfer program where clients can bring us embryos and we'll actually put them in our recip cows. And then when the calf is weaned, those customers will come back and pick up their calves. So my role is mainly with the cow herd. My position is the herds person. So I kind of bounce back and forth between the feedlot and the cow herd. But since I'm still fairly new here, I've really been focusing on the cow herd and just starting to kind of dip my toes into the feedlot things, because the feedlot's pretty foreign to me still. Not something I have a whole lot of experience with. So I'm still learning all of the rations and the nutritional things that go along with that. I manage the cow herd, take care of the calves, make sure everything stays healthy. We're just gearing up to start putting embryos in actually next week. So just making those schedules for the cows, knowing which cows are going in which groups. And that's kind of what I do.
We caught up a bit ago and you were saying a little about this operation. And I'm going to be honest, I did not originally know anything about embryos. I did not know that you put embryos into cows. I figured someone out there was doing it. And so I find that so interesting that you're involved in that now. Can you just describe for our listeners sort of what the operation does, like why you would transplant embryos, like what is an embryo? Just a basic rundown.
So it definitely wasn't something that I came with any experience for that matter, but it's really neat. A lot of our customers are interested in the genetics of the animal and the genomic part of it. They're chasing the data and how good the animal might look on paper. And so in order to improve that, you can mate animals together. A lot of our embryos are IVF, and so they're literally mated in a petri dish in a lab. We take that egg and implant it into our cows, and then that cow will, the embryo will grow inside of her, and she'll calve normally, and she will raise the calf as her own, but it could be, you know, a black cow raising a Hereford calf, just because, you know, it's not her calf, and that's kind of the beauty of it, and people do it. A lot of them are pretty high dollar embryos, and a lot of them will go through sales. And so we don't actually own the embryos. They are already owned by a customer, and they bring us the embryos, and we just raise them up until weaning age, which is usually around 6 months. And then 30 days post-wean, the customer will come and pick their calves up. And a lot of the customers are taking them back. I'd say just a very small percentage of our customers are show people. They're in the show industry, and the calves will get halter broken and then go through a season, a couple years of being in the show ring, and then be sold or be put back in the herd to either be flushed for more embryos or just to grow someone's herd. Or the genomic side of things, like I mentioned earlier, where the people are chasing numbers and trying to mate sires and dams together to get higher numbers in one area. Maybe it's calving ease or birth weight or those dollar amounts. And so the cattle, a lot of times, will go through sales after they leave here.
That's such a crazy concept of like, here's an embryo. Can you like bake it in the oven and like do the whole calving process and then give me a calf out of it? It's just like wild. And it's so funny to think about just like a mama cow raising this calf that has no resemblance or anything, but they have no idea. It's just, it was plopped in there. It's kind of a crazy concept.
It's honestly a cool part of the industry to really be here and hands-on, like the amount of work that goes into it. You know, not everybody is just throwing embryos in cows to like grow their cow herd, because it's a lot of setup and scheduling and just to get this cow pregnant. So it's definitely not for everybody. And it, like you said, it's a neat niche that we've found here. And our customers come from kind of all over. I think the farthest one right now is Florida. So, and then most of them are either Pennsylvania, Maryland, or New Jersey.
Wow, that is so fascinating. Yeah, so we had a few conversations at the end of that 2022 season. You were way more experienced than some of the other apprentices in our program, but I recall some conversations that you and I had where we were both trying to kind of navigate, like, you know, what is a fair pay for someone that has your experience? And like, it was so hard for us to get an answer. Like, we asked some other people, like during some of the supplemental ed calls, and yeah, how did you navigate that then and getting that job? And how would you advise apprentices to navigate that now that you have a little more time to look back, sort of that process of how much do I ask for post-apprenticeship?
It was difficult. And it was hard for me because I felt like I knew that I didn't know everything. And so I knew I had a lot to learn, but I knew that I could bring value to a business or a ranch. I just didn't know what that value was going to look like and how it was going to play out. I feel like a lot of, when you ask how much to get paid, a lot of times they're going to be like, well, what can you give us? And at that point in time, I didn't know. And I don't think anyone would know without actually being fully engaged in the business or the company till you figure out what that value is going to look like. So for me, I just kind of laid everything out on the table during my interview. Like, these are all of the things that I'm very passionate about. This is what I want to continue to do. And I'm not going to make an exception. I want to continue to do these certain things. And if you like it, and if that's something you could see happening here, then that's a value that I'm going to bring to the business. But I think first and foremost, you have to know what you're capable of, know what your skills are, and what your passion is and what you want to continue doing or taking with you wherever you go in a job. And that has to be something you've already proved to yourself. You can't go into something and be like, oh, I think I want to do this, or I think I want to do that. No, you have to know and definitely be confident in that. I guess my advice on how to navigate it would be, don't necessarily look for, you know, the perfect salary right out of the gate, but be honest and have the conversation about what growth looks like in the first couple years that you're there, because they're taking a risk on you also. Even if your resume looks stellar and you have a ton of experience, it's still a big risk to hire somebody you don't know, or you don't know what their skills are just based off of what their resume says. I think the growth conversation is a big part of it. It's like, what might my role look like in 2 years if I, you know, what are the steps and how can I grow?
That makes a lot of sense. And I like the point you made about having evidence, not only for this employer, but also for yourself. Like, you know, I think it's easy to look at a job description and be like, yeah, I can do those. Yeah, it looks fine. I got this. But if I'm hearing you correctly, it's really important to identify that skill and then think of a time where you actually did do that. And maybe even bring it to the interview, but also for yourself, know that you actually have that particular experience instead of sort of glossing over and be like, I'm ready for this, sort of have those very specific cases in mind. Those conversations sound quite intimidating. Were you ever intimidated in talking about pay? And if so, sort of how did you navigate that?
Absolutely. I hate talking about money. I mean, the initial conversation, we really didn't talk too much about actual dollar amounts. It was more a conversation of what the progressive steps might look like and how quickly those would happen and what milestones did I need to meet to make those happen. I mean, here at HERS, we have 2 reviews every year where we sit down and kind of go through what the next year looks like and where I could be at the end of the year if I meet these standards. And so that's really helpful. And I feel like if somewhere doesn't offer that, maybe it's something someone could suggest. You're like, hey, we'd really like to sit down and continue the conversation about where I could be going. And just, if anything, it gives you a sense of peace knowing it's not a dead-end job. Some jobs are, plain and simple. But if there is an opportunity for growth, you want to know what it is and be able to see it in plain sight. It shouldn't be like this hazy, oh, I think I can get there or be promoted a little bit in 6 months, but I don't really know. If you don't know what you're working towards, it's hard to give it your best effort.
Yeah, they are taking a risk on you. It's hard to go in with a crazy, just like, it's hard to go in with a number out of the blue when they don't know you yet. You know, it's like you got to start somewhere. But on the other hand, yeah, it's like that room for growth is almost more important than that number. So, well, thanks for talking about that. I know that was just something that I wondered about because we had talked about it a lot and I was like, shoot, Rachel, I don't know. I was like, because it's so hard, you know, after an apprenticeship, like this is something we struggle with at, you know, on the staff of Kibera is just like preparing people for what you might make in this career, but also knowing that everyone is so different in their skill set and how quickly they're catching on, you know, and you happen to be a person that had a pretty long background. So that was something that you felt comfortable doing, but I think it's important to share for listeners who are pretty new to agriculture, you know, like that process of being able to negotiate a salary, being able to grow in a position, like it comes with time. You've been working on operations, you studied it in school. And so I think that's also another thing that I just wanted to mention for listeners, because yeah, that the path, it might be longer than what it is in other career trades. And that's frustrating, but it's just kind of the way it is. Okay, at your job, I'm super curious. So you have all this like embryo and sort of like waste stuff going on with the whole plant and everything, which is so fascinating. But your job specifically is to focus on the cattle herd. And your goals for that position were to improve the grazing practices in particular, which from my understanding kind of had a lot of room for improvement. How is it going to try to like implement some regenerative grazing processes?
Yeah, it definitely had some room for improvement in the past 30 years. They kind of have been doing, I guess, continuous grazing, just turning the cows out. And when there was no grass left, they'd move them or they'd leave them and supplement. We are blessed to have the haylage. We make haylage off of the hay ground. And that's what we feed in the feedlot. But then also we can supplement our cow herd with it. And it kind of reduces the amount of hay we have to use in the wintertime, but it also gives us a nice cushion for if we do run out of grass or want to pull the cows off of a pasture to let it rest, we can give them a haylage, and actually we mix potato in with it. We can give them that to kind of let our pastures rest a little bit. And so that's what they had been doing for years and years. I mean, it's really hard to identify the pastures in Pennsylvania that are overgrazed or that just aren't thriving. We get way too much rain. Our green up was a month and a half ago, and our grass is growing and it hasn't stopped raining, which is not ideal. But yeah, the cows are grazing already and we're really slowing down on how much hay we're feeding. So we're really blessed in this area, and grass growth is never an issue. You know, the grass always grows. Grass isn't growing. There's, you know, some kind of weed, but typically the cows will eat it. So yeah, it wasn't really a bad thing. But if you do walk out across the pastures, there's standing water in a lot of them. Infiltration is very, very poor. They kind of use the excuse, we sit so low and the pastures are so flat, you know, where our elevation is very, very low. And everything kind of just runs down to the Chesapeake. So that's kind of been the excuse. And I know it's true, but in the back of my mind, I want to continue these practices that I'm trying to implement and hoping that I see a difference in how much water the pastures are able to retain. I know we'll never get to, you know, being completely dry all spring, but that's like one of my goals. And so there's definitely a lot of room for improvement. It's been interesting just because I'm kind of bringing these wild ideas in, you know, like let's set up 6 temporary fences across the pasture and move the cows every day. And it's like, what? Why would we do that? That's so much extra work. And is it really going to benefit us in the long run? So that's a never ending conversation I have with my manager. And we go back and forth with it, but I've been given a lot of opportunity and room to try things, and he's okay with it. He's pretty understanding and definitely open-minded to trying new things. My manager is, and which is awesome. Last summer was a bit of a wild ride just because I didn't really know what I was doing. Like I said, that the apprenticeship was kind of a glimpse into what I wanted to do. But I left there knowing I had a lot more to learn. So coming here and kind of just jumping into it, I sometimes have no clue what I am doing.
Yeah, totally. And yeah, you mentioned that your manager kind of gives you some freedom to try new things. Is there anything else besides just kind of splitting up paddocks that you're curious about trying or that you have tried?
So just another small thing, we started feeding hay on the ground in the pastures. And this is like not a wild concept, but here it was. And the thought behind it was that we were going to have a lot of waste and hay that was not going to be consumed. And that was a conversation we had to have. And so we kind of did some trials and fed hay out on the ground, fed good bales versus not so great bales quality wise, but also then, you know, we had to realize that we wanted them to push that hay into the ground. Yeah, so we learned a lot from it. And I'm hoping that as the grass continues to grow here going into summer, that those places will see some kind of positive impact. And it wasn't because I know, you know, I know that that's how it should be and it's going to be positive, but it might not be this summer. You know, we might see hay lying on the ground all summer long, but eventually, you know, it's going to be a positive.
Does it feel like risky when you're just like, hey guys, we should do this thing that in theory has worked and I've heard of other people doing it. I heard it on a webinar or something, but you're the one that's sort of tossing it into the mix. Does that feel scary?
Absolutely. Yeah. It is a bit of pressure. Just the initial, you know, presenting the idea, I think, is more pressure. I know that these practices work, you know. I mean, my mom, she does a lot of holistic practices and rotational grazing on the farm that I grew up on. And so, like, she's done it. I've seen it done. I know it works. But yeah, kind of trying to convince people that it is a good thing, it is really tricky. And so that feels like the most risky. It's just the feedback I'm going to get from it. But yeah, then just a little bit of nervousness, I suppose, you know, like, are the pastures going to look better? Are the cows going to look better? Because that was the one stipulation my manager gave me, was like, you can do whatever you want with the pastures, but I don't want skinny cows. So like, if you want to, you know, limit their grazing or, you know, condense them in certain areas, go for it. But if the cows get skinny, we're pulling it all, kind of thing. So yeah, just like praying that these things I'm implementing are going to pay off, and reminding myself that it's not happening overnight. It's something that takes a lot of time.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, and it sounds like, you know, you went from being an apprentice to being in a pretty good leadership role. I mean, you're not like the main farm manager, but you are in, you know, the herd manager. Let's talk about burnout, because you moved back to your hometown. Well, around your hometown, you've got family around that kind of takes up a lot of your time in a good way. And it's what you wanted. You originally were like, oh, I just really miss my family when you went out to Colorado. So it was a good thing when you moved back. But, you know, in our previous conversations, you were saying like that it was a lot. It was a lot to juggle everything. So yeah, how is that impacting you? And how does it impact what you see for yourself in the future?
Living for so many years away from home, I was constantly feeling, you know, I'm far away, I'm missing holidays, I'm missing birthdays and family dinners. And me and my siblings and my parents, we've always been very, not always, that is a lie. We are now very close. Growing up, we obviously were kind of a rough and tumble group of kids. Like, we fought and
I think we all are. Yeah. Yeah,
exactly. But yeah, in our older years, my siblings and I have gotten very close, especially my two sisters. And yeah, I was always feeling like I was missing out on things or just not close to them in our relationships because of my distance. So I moved home to be closer to family. And I always tell people, like, if I could pack up my whole family, take them, you know, back out west, I would do it in a heartbeat. And I think half of them would be totally on board. But I didn't realize how different it would be living so close to everyone. I'm 45 minutes from my parents, about the same from one of my brothers. And then I'm 10 minutes down the road from one of my sisters. Just all very close. I see my sister every other night, if not every night sometimes. So it's awesome and I love it. But there's, yeah, some negatives that come along with it. I don't set aside a lot of time to really just be alone and to have any kind of self-reflection. You know, there's always somebody around. And I also feel like, that saying, like, distance makes the heart grow fonder. I feel like, you know, I see my family all the time, but yet somehow I was more in tune with them when I lived farther away. I don't know if that makes sense, but I think we would just spend hours on the phone together. And now when we see each other, it's like, oh, I saw you yesterday. We don't really need to talk about anything. I've just been lately trying to be intentional in having quiet, you know, morning coffee, or when I do work alone, not putting on a podcast or Netflix and sticking the phone in my pocket and just like listening to noise. It's just being alone with my thoughts. And it was a big shift, because in Nebraska and in Colorado, I did a lot of time alone, and I would listen to music, but you can only listen to a playlist so many times. And so I did a lot of thinking on my own. You know, I travel on my own, and then moving back east, you know, the pace is different, the workload is different, and being so close to everybody and everything, it's a completely different world.
We were sort of talking about what's next for you, and I think the natural progression is for somebody like you to become a ranch manager. But I actually hear this a lot, is a lot of young people are like, I don't even know that I want that much responsibility because of the burnout. And I think it's partly because you're already feeling burnout in your position. and taking on more seems like kind of impossible, but it's also, you know, cultural in agriculture. It's like people who are in leadership positions generally are very overwhelmed and kind of walk around in a bit of a consistently tired state. I think a lot of people, I've just been talking about this with some other folks lately, is like, it's kind of a deterrent to being a leader, because it's just, you look at that and you're like, oh my gosh, that's kind of scary to me. Does that resonate for you? Are you excited about sort of climbing the ladder and becoming a manager? Or do you kind of want to hang out where you're at? I've actually heard some people want to like go back to being an apprentice, being like the ranch hand.
I guess in college, I thought that I wanted to be a ranch manager. And even in my first job out of school, that was my mindset, was that eventually, you know, I'll graduate from ranch hand to ranch manager. But in this role I'm in now, I definitely have the most responsibility I've ever had in a position. And I get to make a lot of decisions and help with a lot of records and kind of just the office day-to-day stuff that I was never required to do anywhere else. And so I get this, I'm just looking at the tip of the iceberg of how much goes into running a ranch or running a company. And, you know, me and my manager share an office, and I, you know, like I said, I just get to see a little bit of the amount of duties he has and the stress it puts him under. And I'm realizing that, no, I don't think I'm cut out to juggle that many things. And the other part that kind of deters me is I'm not a people manager. I really struggle with that part of it. I like to be involved with people and to kind of connect with people, but to manage them is a whole different ballpark. And that's something that I've kind of been challenged in this job to take some initiative and train new employees or the part-time employees. And so that, you know, if I ever need help doing anything, I can have someone who knows what they're doing and is trained to give me a hand or to take over, kind of thing. Yeah, that kind of responsibility is something neat I have here. But yeah, to do it on a management scale, I don't think it's for me.
I mean, how old are you right now?
I'm 27.
27. Okay. Do you feel like that's just a factor of being 27 and it's a temporary thing? I don't know. I'm kind of inclined to believe that, but I also, yeah, I don't know. It's just kind of a question that I have is like, maybe it's just patience. Maybe it's just like growing into something over time.
Yeah, it could be, but I mean, looking down, yeah, you're probably right. Looking down, like if I were to say in 10 years, might I be in a bit more of a management role? I could see myself doing it or getting better at it just with time and time invested in practice. But it's a skill that I am struggling to retain.
This is something that I'm really curious about, because I hate to hear young people be like, oh, I don't want to be a leader myself. But I also totally understand why, you know. Is there anything that you would need to help you get to the point where you were like, yes, I'll be ready for that?
I'm kind of being pushed a little bit to take more of leadership roles and having, you know, somebody under me or, you know, being given even just a someone part-time who follows me around, you know, and I get to train them. And so just little pushes like that for me seems to be beneficial in just like teaching myself how to teach another person and how to connect with them. Because I guess my teaching strategy would be to show you how to do it. Like I will do it in front of you and then you just know how to do it. And really spelling it out or talking it through with somebody is difficult, but it's something that we have to do every day in life, is to, you know, back up what we're doing and be able to talk it through. And yeah, so being able to practice that just a little bit every day, I think I will get better and be able to kind of recall situations like, oh yeah, I know how to do this because I did this here with this person.
Yeah, and if we focused on a little bit of the stuff that you're struggling with in this position and in agriculture in general, which I just always want to like balance out because I always like to focus on the struggles, but what keeps your heart in agriculture?
Yeah, I think for me, it's, I love like the hard work, the down, the dirty work. You know, I love being outside. Like today it was raining and we were putting cedars in the pouring rain. And it was just like, I live for those moments. And when you think it would be just the worst possible situation, the reward is so much greater at the end of it. And so I think that's what keeps me in it is like the constant push and pull. You know, calving season is so difficult and, you know, I don't sleep hardly at all, but yet it's all worth it, you know, when you have a live, healthy calf on the ground. And so that's what keeps me in it is just the hard work and then the reward at the end is so great. And I think it's because we're dealing with live animals, the reward is so much greater than, I mean, this is personal preference than any other job because, I mean, you're keeping live animals alive and keeping them healthy and bringing them into the world. And it's just, I really love that part of it.
Last question, what advice would you give to another beginning agrarian, another person in agriculture, or perhaps a new agrarian program apprentice?
I would say try as many things as you can, whether that means moving around a lot, like don't necessarily get caught up in having to, like we said, climbing the ladder at one location. It's okay. I feel like this is not something that is normalized in our society. Like it's, you know, you get a job out of college and then you stay at that job for 10 years. It's okay to bounce around for a time. Like that's what college and the years after are for, is to figure out what you want to do in life. And so I just would recommend, you know, trying everything, you know, getting a taste for a lot of things because like I earlier, we talked about what value you're going to bring to your future workplace. You don't know what your interests or, you know, what your passions are going to be unless you've experienced them. And so you don't know what value you're going to be able to bring down the road unless you try things, even if they're uncomfortable. And then once you do kind of try things and move around and see different cultures or way of doing things and you kind of know what direction you want to go, really advocate for yourself and for your interests and don't be afraid to, you know, lay them all out there and don't settle for just any position because there are so many different ranches and businesses and so many different ways of doing things. Like you will find the perfect place that really just is a perfect fit for you. As long as you kind of stick to your guns and advocate for yourself and what you want to get out of a future job.
Yeah, I like that. And it's also, you know, you kind of asked around and got a little bit of input too. It's like, I think it's important to advocate for yourself and it's also important to pull in other people because, well, I mean, you had a pretty good understanding, but I think a lot of people kind of need some input from others in the industry. What you did is you asked me, you asked a bunch of other people at, you know, the conference and supplemental ed calls about like, all right, where do I land here? What should I be asking for? Which I thought was really smart.
Yeah. Yeah. No, Kivera, you know, set us up with a really good network of people. And yeah, I really valued that and yourself just being someone easy to talk to. And I have a whole list of people that I probably had the same conversation with, just trying to get other people's opinions because they're very valuable. Seeing it from a different viewpoint or from even someone who's not in ag, and then just giving a second opinion can open your eyes to some different ways of doing things. So definitely, yeah, having a good network.
Well, Rachel, thank you so much. We miss you a lot here in Colorado. hope you come out and visit sometime. Hope we'll see it at a conference. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Taylor. This has been fun. Excited that you asked me.
Thank you so much for tuning in. If you'd like to connect to the broader Kivirik community of ranchers, farmers, conservation and government agency professionals, educators, nature nerds, curious consumers, and more, we're excited to have you. Our website is kivirikcoalition.org, and in the upper right, click on Get E-News to sign up for our newsletter, where we share happenings and events, learning opportunities, job postings, and more. Also, if you're enjoying this podcast, please leave us a review and a rating. It really will help other people find us and maybe even find their next step in regenerative agriculture. Thanks so much, and see you next time.
This podcast was produced by Kivirik Coalition in our quest to support resilience on working lands. Learn more about our work and how you can support regenerative agriculture and solutions to climate change at kivirikcoalition.org. This episode was edited and engineered by Caleb Wenzel Fisher. A Folk Story, our theme music, was made by Alex Cristoforetti, and we're grateful for our guests who take time out of their busy lives to share their experiences with us.